The terms resilience, stress, burnout have become everyday terms as issues of mental health and well-being become part of everyday discussions. Particularly during COVID, there has been a focus on preventing burnout for those on the front line and indeed for all of us behind the front line. The WHO, the World Health Organization, defines burnout as feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, or increased mental distance from one's job, or feelings of negativity or cynicism related to one's job. So it's very much related to your job. And, you know, there's formal burnout scores that can be used to measure that aspect. But I suppose, what's the human story? What does it really feel like? Are there warning signs? What's it like when you hit it? How do you get out of it? And no doubt it's different for everyone. But today I'm joined by community pharmacist, Dec Kearns, who experienced burnout and who joins us today to share his experience. I'm Katrina Bradley. This is The Resilient Pharmacist. Dec, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Katrina. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Before we start, can I ask you just to tell us a little about yourself so that people are, you know, get a picture of you in their mind?
Yeah. My name is Dec. I'm from Dunleary, neck of the woods. Live in Cabinteely, working in Greystones at the minute. I'm nearly 25 years qualified. Can't believe it, quarter of a century. So yeah, I qualified in 1996. I would have gone to university in Sunderland and did a pre-reg in Sheffield and then came home. Come from a long line of community pharmacists. My dad's a pharmacist and his dad before him.
Oh, wow.
And uncle and auntie and cousin. So
So it was in the family.
So there's a few of it's in the blood, as they say.
In the blood. Very good. Thank you. And you've experienced burnout. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience and what led up to that?
So I had, you know, there's so many words to describe it. It was burnout. It was a breakdown. I do choose the word breakthrough, looking back on it. You know, the people would say shattering in July of 2015. Looking back, it was severe. And it was coming for quite a while. It was the culmination of, I think, what a lot of people went through at that time from, you know, looking back, starting in and around 2008. A 7-year build-up, I would say, and that just got progressive year on year because of circumstances.
So that 2008 to 2015, really the recession that hit everybody.
The sands just constantly shifted, didn't they? So for anybody in any profession, it was very difficult. You just couldn't be sure of anything. So the financial end of it, and my timing in life and what was going on, and personally as well. So definitely that was, you know, at one level, that was the factors at play, was the financial pressure. Professionally, you know, things had changed and, running a business but being a professional pharmacist as well.
And it was very, you know, 2007 Act, I suppose, that all of that was starting to unfold and be implemented and change practice, wasn't it?
Yeah, big change and trying to move with that, but with everything else going on at the same time, definitely elements of professional stress and business stress, which is, you know, they're different, you know, managing the pure pharmacy elements of it. And then the financial aspect of it too.
Yeah.
So there was no doubt there was that. And just constantly trying to keep all the balls in the air. And then not being aware of really of what was going on, you know.
And when you say not being aware of what was going on, you mean in terms of how your well-being?
Yes. I mean, I think when you get into that hamster wheel and trying to manage everything, and then, you know, when coping mechanisms are poor, but when the level of busyness, the level of doing, trying to manage everything is just constantly going, just having no capacity to see that it was never going to change, and really not admitting that I couldn't manage it all.
Okay.
Like there was just no way that any one person could manage all of that.
And can I ask you, because there would have been a lot of pharmacists in similar positions and possibly friends of yours or colleagues, did anybody ever talk about it? Because that time was really tough, the introduction of the Pharmacy Act, the recession, just all the change. Did people acknowledge that this was a tough time?
That's a good question. Looking back, I don't think so. You're trying to manage the day to day, aren't you? I mean, I can remember the meetings that we all had and all of those type of things. And there was at one level there was a collective sense of trying to manage a particular situation. Mm-hmm. But then you're isolated again. You go back to your day to day. So no, there was probably no forum that I was in. Mm-hmm. Where there was an admission for me or recognizing what was going on.
Okay.
And how tough it was. So, and I suppose that's natural. You just get isolated into your day to day. And when I think back of, you know, trying to manage it, trying to improve the business, trying to, you know, cope with all of that. And then the sands would shift again. And I suppose then, like, all of that stuff outside of your control, and the frustration and difficulty with all of that.
And the duration of it, it was a good 6-7 year slog before it caught up with you, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, looking at it, I mean, there were certain signs along the way.
And what would they have been?
Well, I look back to 2013 and going through a particularly stressful time and seeing a counsellor for the first time.
Okay.
And taking some time off work. You know, I would have never had to take time off work in that way.
Yeah.
So all the way along, trying to manage it on my own and kind of wearing it like a badge of honour as well.
Wow. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What was that badge like?
Oh, look, I mean, the badge of honour of not taking a lunch break, the badge of honour of working, you know, closing the door at 6 o'clock, but working till 7 and allowing patients in. And
what was the honour about? The honour was in being so much in service of others, was it?
Just that you can do it, I think,
you know.
I remember back in my pre-reg here, you know, sometimes getting lunch at 4 o'clock in the day. Uh-huh. So that's the start, but you're taught this.
Yeah, I think we all accept that from the beginning, don't we? And if you're not like, able for it, it's almost like you're not hard enough.
Yeah, there's definitely that in it.
Right.
You know, and not in maybe overtly, but just implicitly by the culture and the way, you know, what goes on.
That's it. It's the culture, isn't it? It's the culture.
Yeah, it's part of that. It's part of that. And it's not even that you don't have the strength to not do it. It's just that it doesn't even occur to you.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what everybody's doing.
Okay.
And everybody's progressing and expanding and
that's what normal is.
Yeah, that's what normal is. But not seeing, you know, And of course, when you're younger, you can manage some of that, you know, it doesn't hit you as hard. But I think if the culture is different, if from a younger age, you're taught, you know, this is what can happen. And I suppose that's part of what I'm discussing is this is what can happen, may not happen to everybody.
Okay.
But this is what can happen. This is how severe it can be.
So can you tell us about the experience?
Yes, I mean the event itself was July 2015, but as I said, it was a long lead up.
A long lead up, but that you didn't see coming.
No.
Okay, so there was a train coming at you down the track, but you did not see this at all.
Wasn't aware in any way how severe it would be.
Okay.
And I suppose it culminated in the loss of a business and the loss of a way of life.
Which is a huge monumental event.
Yeah. And I suppose on one level, that was the precipitating factor, but really a lot of other stuff behind the scenes that led up to it. And it manifested in non-functionality. It's just not been able to function. I remember on the day I was due to go and see the solicitor and I just couldn't. There was no way.
And where were you when you felt this?
I was at home. Okay. I was at home. I mean, if you'd offered me 10 million euro, there was no way I was going to go for that meeting.
Okay.
I couldn't. At that stage, there was a complete breakdown happening. And it was full system, as in physical and emotional and mental. So cognitively, I wasn't capable. Physically, I wasn't capable. And the emotions were just raging. So there was no way I was going to be able to go to that meeting. So that was the initial day that I can remember.
Was that the first time you kind of felt, like I just can't, or allowed yourself to even think I can't?
It was coming. I mean, I remember the kind of weeks before, and certainly the week or 2 weeks before working in the shop. And I remember, I can have it in my mind's eye now. It's funny what you remember. It's going to burn on your memory. I remember one evening, there was a I was with a patient and it was after hours. And I could literally barely close the door as they left. And that was a bodily thing. You know, I
Was
was
it
my hands were
exhaustion
shaking.
or was it just?
Just an absolute exhaustion. You know, it is difficult. I suppose this is the processing cognitively, mind-wise, what's going on. But just this enormous feeling of pressure. And that I couldn't be there. You know, I just couldn't be there. So that was shortly before
So you felt that
when
as you
I.
closed the door and then roll forward a couple of days and you're at home about to go to a meeting and you just can't move.
Just couldn't, just literally couldn't move. And that was it, I suppose. I mean, that was the breakdown. I mean, that initial period lasted. There was an initial 5 day period that I can remember. And of course, looking back, you know, because it got so severe, you're trying to think, gosh, what went on? I can remember those 5 days, and I can remember not eating at
Not
all.
eating at all.
Not e I sparkling water. I drank sparkling water,
Oh my gosh.
and I can remember not eating for 5 days. The system just wouldn't take it.
Wow. And what were your thoughts at that time? Did you know what was going on?
I, you know, there's a counselor asked me that recently, and like I would say part not, more than part not. I
Right.
mean, you're that's what I mean by full system. You know, you and that part of this, you are then frightened of what's going on. There's an initial event, there's an initial happening, and then somewhere you're aware of it. And the fear of that. So that's kind of, and then you get in this loop. So that kind of what went on, because there was, you know, just enormous fear, like terror almost as to what was happening.
And what was that terror? What was the fear that you didn't know what was happening and you didn't know what was coming?
Yes,
Okay.
exactly. And what was going to happen? So there is like there's so much going on. There's so you're not in control in any way, shape, or form. And
Okay.
that in itself is horrifying. You know, I think of that. I think of that bit in the film American Beauty of the bag in the
Yeah.
wind. You know, that film, and that's exactly
You're
what it
just.
was like. You know, I liken it to a bag in the wind, or a ship without an anchor. Because when I look back, I lost all of my anchors,
Okay.
and it was very visceral. It was very physical. I literally felt like a bag in the wind,
Yeah.
and. As I said, the cycle of fear, because you know you're not in control and you just can't find a grounding anywhere, and your thoughts are gone, your emotions are non-controllable,
Wow.
and your body is gone from a point of view of energy, yes, but anything else. So it's a full system thing. For me, it
Oh
was
my
anyway.
gosh. Yeah. It's amazing what your brain can do. I remember going through a particularly stressful time, and when I look back, just having a really exaggerated sense of the risk that was involved in something. And pretty much picturing myself living under a bridge with my children in a cardboard box. I just, had myself thinking, oh my God, I am never going to be able to recover from this, which of course wasn't true, but at the time you couldn't have told me. It sounds like that you're in the middle of something and you just don't know how you're going to get out of it or where you're going to go. Is it something similar to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you have no perspective
Yeah.
on you have no perspective on anything, and time. You know, what we would perceive as time changes as well, and with despair, because that's what it is as well, is an enormous despair. I think with despair, you know, the greatest trick of despair is that it lasts forever, because you've no perspectiveness on time. A lot of what of happening, it's real. It's the events are there. You know, you're not going to change what led up to it. What you're feeling is there, but what isn't true. What isn't true is that it won't change, because everything does. And since then, when I've gone through similar thing or similar tough times and felt this feeling again, you know, that's what resilience is. It's a learning, and it's a sense that, you know, it won't last forever. But at that time, a second is like 12 hours
Wow.
when you're going through it. That's my memory of it.
So that's an important message for anybody who might be listening who has gone through or goes through something similar. It's remember this too does pass, even if it doesn't feel that that's possible when you're in the middle of it.
I think it's really important. Everything passes. That sense of impermanence that I've come to learn a little bit about, and that means the good as well, because part of the story, part of what led up to it, was a complete attachment to the profession, to my life, to my job, to the place where I went, the building, and a complete identification that that was me. So that was part of the story. And that changes whether that comes with retirement, or whether it comes in my circumstances, or whether you choose at some stage. There's a loss in that, you know.
And that ties in with that whole point of that you made of being anchorless, of feeling if you're so, your identity is so wrapped up in something and then it's threatened, it really leaves you drifting and not knowing what you are.
Yes, when that's your, and it was from an early age, you know, with pharmacists. You know, I remember looking back at my friends, like, we qualify, we're professionals, we have a name, you go into that role very quickly, and that's there's lots of progressions within it then, and the things changed, I think, from opportunities. But like, you are a pharmacist, like, I can remember, like, that's what my mates knew me as. Like, obviously I was more, but it's like anybody you met knew that's what you did, and that's what you were. So there is an identification. Mine was a family business, whether that accentuates it.
So basically, not only being a pharmacist, but a pharmacist of a family and a line of pharmacists, and the identification from a family and personal point of view must have been really there, accentuating the professional identity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of my story. It's not everybody, but I think even as a professional, you know, you're part identified by that. And mine, when it was, I chose in ways to be identified as that, and certainly attached to all of it.
Many of us are like that and don't recognize it. And it's only when something is threatened or you realize that's not it, you get the chance to look back and realize how things were. Can we go back to those 5 days and you being, I've had an image of you just being so, I suppose, helpless, or maybe that's not the word, maybe it's just unable to do anything and drinking water, your body not even being able to take food. Who can you tell me then what happened next, or who was around you, or what did you do in those 5 days? Did you have to, tell people the solicitor? Did you have to call the solicitor and say, I'm not going to be there? Or, how did it practically feel, and then how did things evolve from there?
Yeah, I suppose at that stage you just have to rely on people around you. My dad and my sister in particular, from a what needed to be done. Other family members. So I had a lot of love around me, and that really is an important. I suppose one of the things that would make me sad, when I think of people that might be in that situation that don't have support.
All right. Yeah. So that support was fundamental to somebody just
Yeah,
taking over almost and doing what needed to be done.
yeah. Yeah, and friends keeping in contact as they started to understand the gravity of what was going on. And you're not in a position, or I wasn't, to respond, but just to looking back, the connection, that somebody would text you, because really, you are helpless. You are completely out of control of anything, and then the energy levels just hit the floor.
And then for how long did it last?
It's funny looking back, those initial 5 days, and then I have snippets of memory of, say, the next few months. I can remember the first time going up to the local village for a bite to eat, with my wife. I can remember making my son dinner, for the first time, and what a challenge that was. And that's how low you can get, nothing's all in your brain.
Did you see any medical practitioners? Did you go to your GP?
I went to my GP, I did, and we spoke. So I did do that initially. I don't know, as pharmacists, I suppose you get two sides of it. You might, again, and I think some doctors can be the same way. You know the profession so much. At various stages, I should have seen a GP, and got some help, but not wanting to do that, some strange sense of pride, of not wanting to go that route for me. I don't know what that was about, but a sense of managing it.
Yeah, we're responsible for all these medications. We dispense them. We support people taking them, and then it yeah, I suppose it almost feels, isn't it that that saying of the shoemaker's children always go barefoot? It's sometimes when you're involved in something, you neglect your own needs in that area because you're serving everybody else's needs. So you're helping patients, but maybe not wanting to be a patient. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't quite know. I mean, I suppose that sense of I should be able
You should.
to manage this. I'm not mentally unwell.
Okay.
You know, a denial of what had happened, and maybe to engage with services like that would have been the admission and acceptance. Because then it's official.
Other people on this podcast have said they didn't want to seek help. They felt it was an admission of not being able to cope. They didn't like the idea of what people thought about them. They weren't sure, but it's a common theme in every podcast so far. People have said, I knew I could and I should, but I didn't. I wonder what that's about.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. You know, we're on one side of the bench, and maybe we don't want to admit that we're the other side as well.
Wow.
You know, we're the patients as well,
Yeah.
and wrapped up in all of that sense of to keep going and to keep managing. And I think really, as I think about it again, like a lack of acceptance of what had happened. You know, and because that would have been a black and white prescription. Taking something, whatever it might have been, engaging with services, so I think really a denial of what was going on as well.
Denial. Okay. And so you went through this period, you were slowly getting some energy, but even small tasks like cooking dinner, getting up the stairs were still taking a lot of energy. I'm assuming that eventually started to ease and you started to get better. Can you tell us a little bit about coming out of that period?
I think, you know, looking at it, this denial and this still managing probably went on for another, possibly even another year,
Wow.
and using mechanisms to block it out. You know, would have used alcohol as a crutch,
Okay.
and just doing that type of thing to block it out. And this is all in hindsight now, and then. I suppose really coming out of it was the following summer where that changed, and some sense that I was probably headed for the same thing again and worse.
Okay.
And it's incredible what you can.
And did you recognize that, or did somebody point it out to you?
No, I think really, you know, the phrase I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Okay.
I'd had this. Event. This is the thing. Like I'd had this event, recovered somewhat, and was probably headed the same way again.
Okay.
So although I had the capacity to function,
Okay, so
things.
that cognitive and physical capacity to function came back, but.
But lots still wrong.
Okay.
And not acknowledging what I'd been through.
Do you know, Deck, it actually strikes me that there are going to be plenty of people within the profession who recognise, and probably outside the profession, but I do know from our needs analysis about pharmacist well-being, a number of people responded saying, I'm using coping mechanisms that are including alcohol and unhealthy habits, and I know that needs to change. But when we asked them, how are you coping with the stress? Some people did say, badly. And so it occurs to me that there may be people who are listening to this who can associate and recognize some of the things you're talking about. And so I know one of the hopes you have is that even if people recognize and hear a story and think, well, actually, you need to stop this before it goes too far and address it, that will have been helpful for people.
You know, when I was looking at, possibly what I've learned or where I'm at, I think really it all points that boils down to literally just stopping. For me, that's what comes up time and time again. And that can be tricky when you don't recognize that you're in the situation. But if somebody can say, yeah, look, I'm actually feeling okay at the minute, but life is pretty chaotic or hectic. I'm managing, but I'm working X amount of hours or whatever it means for somebody. And even though you might be feeling okay, it's just say, well, I wonder what would happen if I stopped.
And when you say stopped, what do you mean?
It can mean, for me, I have to stop. You know, what that means, taking a break. Getting away from me on my own.
Okay.
It could mean different things to different people. You can still be working about your day, but, you know, putting down things that really don't give you time just to sit and reflect, you know, whatever that means to you. And it does mean different things to different people. And, you know, going on holiday doesn't necessarily cut it, you know, if that's going to put you under stress as well.
So interesting
whatever it takes to kind of step out, because until you stop, you've no concept. I mean, I met somebody that I had employed recently, and because of COVID, you know, COVID made a lot of people stop, but they were involved in sport at a decent enough level and doing their own training and training other people. And then they had to stop, and it was then that it came up for them.
Okay.
So the stopping, they didn't necessarily have a breakdown, but the stopping all of a sudden brought up what was going on.
Issues.
So that's what I mean. Yeah. And it can be tricky when you've never done it. Like, again, in culturally and how we're brought up, we roll straight from school normally to and our path is university and then training and then work. And we work 40 hours a day, which the longer I go on, you know, I hope future generations look back and see that as a form of madness in itself. I find that very difficult, very personally to me. You know, and then for a lot of people, when you add on the traveling, when I do the things I do now, because I don't work the 40 hours, but I'm like, how can you fit in anything nourishing around that? And that's the, so it that's what I mean. And it's hard to explain because it's personal to people. Because you can't make somebody see these things. You can't tell somebody. It's only just to introduce the idea that, look, this is... And some people will be further along the path because they'll be feeling bad. They'll know, like they'll really know.
Yeah.
And it's okay to stop, you know.
So using the analogy you had earlier of being on that hamster wheel, it's just come off it for a few minutes or for whatever length of time it is. Before you
whatever that is, whatever that is, whether that's a few hours a week, whether it's taking 3 months off work, you know what, you know, because if it ends where, I suppose pointed where it ends, where I ended up, it's serious stuff. It's severe. It's debilitating. It can be worse for some people, and it's not to be taken lightly. I mean, they do say that's your mental health. So without kind of scaring people, it can happen to anybody. And we are in a profession that is demanding. It takes a lot of energy. The older you get, I think that's harder, and the more responsibility you get. So it's to kind of look at those.
And if somebody had told you that in 2010, say, or 2011 or 2012, when you were going through that stage of being busy and wearing your badge of honour, not knowing what was on the road for you in 2015, would you have listened? Would you have even countenanced the idea that you could have taken 3 months off?
I don't think so. Maybe if what was around me, if I'd listened to something like this, if I had an identification with somebody who was very similar, I think that's a good thing. Maybe. And sometimes, you know, not so, I think all the time. I mean, you have to meet suffering to know what it is on the other side. I mean, I think that's inescapable with life.
Yeah.
But what I wouldn't want for somebody is to meet it with no tools, with no sense. Certainly with no sense that there isn't hope. If they could see themselves on the journey before they get to where I got to, that would be a huge thing.
Because it's always that thing. It struck me when you said, not me. People assume this will happen to somebody else and not them.
I think building into that is that there's a weakness. Maybe you're not strong enough.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a breakdown, you just can't, like things that I obviously don't subscribe to now, but somewhere maybe within me was that sense of that if you're strong enough, this doesn't happen to
this
you.
This doesn't happen to you.
Like, yeah. And that's not what it's about. That's not what it's about. There's so much outside of your control. And then if what's in your control, you're not managing well, when they culminate and come together, you get what happened to me. You know?
Well, that's really interesting because I've been involved in discussions recently and was asking somebody, what's the difference between resilience and well-being? And they said, well-being is where everything can be fine when everything's fine. But then resilience is where you can be okay when things aren't fine. And somebody who has good well-being, or so they perceive, they've a good life, they've got good balance, they've got good social work, but they don't have resilience and it, you know, they haven't thought about that stopping, self-care, recognising symptoms. That's where it goes to burnout or breakdown. So you can think you have well-being, but when, to pardon the expression, the shit hits the fan, you haven't looked after yourself enough to be ready for that, it can really have a huge impact. Is that kind of what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think the things I would do now, you know, the analogy is there with keeping fit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you can keep yourself fit instead of waiting until you're 5 stone overweight and suffer an event of some sort, if you can keep yourself fit, that whatever that is, you know, whatever level, that's good.
Okay.
And it is, you know, this phrase that has started to come about of mental fitness. It is absolutely about that. That's the analogy. If I don't do things to keep myself on an even keel, because life is going to intervene.
Yeah. Things are going to happen.
Things are going to happen. I had a separation and sadly Kira got cancer.
Oh gosh.
In 2018, and she passed in February 2019.
Oh dear.
But being able to have some sense to help and be in a space where you can manage something, as huge as that.
So did some of the learnings from the 2015, the 2016 episode, did you carry those through and they helped you cope with hard times subsequently?
It's a recognition. It's the stopping again. And because I've been through the system almost kind of shouts at me around 2018, which was about 7 months into her illness. I felt it.
Okay.
And it was as strong as that. I really felt it. Mm-hmm. This pressure, the stress, the anger, the frustration. Mm-hmm. And I was working, and I was going between so many different places. So I cut hours in work, and I engaged with a counsellor, and that because I knew where I was headed.
Okay. So early intervention.
Early intervention, seeing the signs, being able to, and that was a saving grace. I've had it twice recently over COVID.
Okay.
Funny enough, last year around doing good things, you know, so this is a funny kind of flip on what's happened, because that striving, that feeling of not good enough. I wasn't quite baking the banana bread, but I was doing lots, and all of a sudden it was like too much.
Okay. So
it was too much.
Getting back into all of that activity for whatever the reason, whatever the motivation, but too much.
It wasn't work necessarily. I mean, I was managing work and obviously my kids, but too much. So I think.
So what were the things you were taking on? Just extra things that you didn't need to?
I was doing the yoga. I was up early. Mm-hmm. I was doing the running. There was lots of stuff as well as managing the emotions of where I was with COVID and the isolation and the busyness. And again, like any amount of things that everybody has in their lives, I was choosing to throw a little bit more on top of it, and it was too much.
Okay. So what did you do?
It was too much. I stopped.
That's it, isn't it? You stopped. Right.
I stopped because you get a sense of where you're going.
So if you knew back then, say when you were 30, 35, what you know now in terms of recognizing the symptoms and recognizing the behaviors of getting busier and busier and the hamster wheel going faster and faster, do you think you could have stopped it?
If I knew back then,
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
If I knew,
It's a skill
absolutely,
thing. If you'd had
because
the skills, yeah.
that's what's happened. It's initially it's the recognition,
Yeah.
it's the awareness, it's the awareness. And if you have the coping mechanisms, and if you stop, you have some capacity to be aware, and that's the starting point.
So it's making the unconscious conscious. You were making all of these unconscious decisions because it was part of your identity. It was part of what was expected. It was part of what was going on in the world, but you weren't aware is something that you've said. Whereas now you feel it, you know it, you recognize it, and you do something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's an evolving journey because there's good and bad in that, like everything. But the starting point is to stop and then to acknowledge, to start to get a sense of what does too much look like for me. You know, we've spoken about it's okay not to be okay, and that's a really good thing that's come through in our culture, I think, over the last while. I think the progression is, well, what does that mean in relation to what I've discussed? What does too much look like and feel like for me? And when is good enough good enough? Again, as pharmacists were checking constantly, I said you were the ultimate box tickers, and we are. We've got to check what comes in from whatever sources come in from. We've got to check our processes, and we've got to check what goes out, and we're the last port of call. And it's hugely responsible, and we have to carry that every day.
Yeah, and I think what I often see with students, and we've heard, talked about in other podcasts, is that sense of responsibility and almost accuracy and standards getting to the point of perfectionism, and that leading to unrealistic expectations of oneself. Even if we have to keep those standards within the pharmacy and dispensing and patient care, not expecting perfection of ourselves in other areas of our lives. So I think sometimes we have to hold our responsibility lightly in the sense that we take it seriously when we need to take it seriously, but actually being able to let it go at other times as well is something that I don't necessarily know or a pharmacy in general, if everybody gets that. Some people get it brilliantly, don't get me wrong. Sometimes there's loads of pharmacists I know who are well able to juggle the responsibilities and the fun, but there are some we've a tendency towards taking ourselves quite seriously. I don't know if that resonates or if you feel that that touches on what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the issue is when you identify with that, going back to that issue, when you identify and are attached to it so much, it's hard to put it down, even when you've closed the door. So I think part of the coping mechanism with that is to close the door and say that's the end of it, and you have another life, you know, to cultivate and foster another life,
So your
whereby it's only
non-pharmacist self, it's, yeah.
It's only part of you. It's only part of you. I mean, it has to be taken seriously because of what we're
Yeah.
involved in. But it's only part of you, and it's only a job.
And I think what's important to recognize is your point of what works for somebody, what works for you is important. So there's some pharmacists and general public where people have this balance and they've got it from the beginning for whatever reasons in terms of how they experience and what their experiences were like and their personality and their nature and nurture. You know, it's so individualistic, isn't it? So there may be some people listening to this who just can't associate it with it. And that's either because they have the awareness and they didn't end up in a place, or they don't have the awareness and they don't realize that they're not tapping into the emotion and the feelings.
Yeah. And you know, some people will just have to get to that space,
Yeah.
unfortunately.
And your hope
You
is
know.
that when they get to that space, if they've heard this, they might recognize it a bit sooner, or they might remember that it will pass, that it might feel interminable, but that it will be, there will be a day where they feel better, and to endure. And then any other words of wisdom or advice or experience that you'd like to add in to people who might be listening to this going, gosh, this maybe sounds like me, or I get it. I'm repeating the same cycle too.
I suppose, you know, don't take your mental health for granted. That's one point. You know, again, not in a scary way, but you know, I do think what happened to me can happen and happens to a lot of people, and can happen. So it does happen and it can happen. To start to even contemplate changing things, if there is a recognition, you know, even if you're feeling great, that there's a lot going on, to even just be curious as to what it might be to stop. Because for me, that's where the awareness comes, and then you have the choice to do things. To start to understand what too much is for you, to cultivate that life outside of pharmacy. You know, I've engaged with a counselor. That's another thing. I do think that somebody who's trained professionally, you can sit with them. I've engaged with counselors through crisis, through really needing to, and then most recently, just to find out more about myself. And you can do it. That would be the other thing. You know, if you're sitting there feeling fine, you know, I've gone from maybe 20, 30 years ago thinking that it was something, why would you ever engage with a counselor? And maybe thinking it was a bit cringy or corny to thinking that, you know, everybody could do a chatting with somebody. So to find somebody that you can be honest with, you know, to find, whether it's a counselor or to find somebody you can, or a group of people you can be honest with, to start to know yourself. Because once you're aware of that, you can start to make the choices. But like a trained counselor is good. You know, I've identified, you know, even as a grown man, the acknowledgement that there's huge parts of yourself that aren't, you know, you haven't really cultivated parts of yourself. You know, that not good enough, and that striving is so common in people, and it underlies a lot of things. You know, out of that, I've tried to start engage recently in things that I'm not good at. That was actually part of it. The doing and the being, you know, we're so good at doing. And again, the profession really lends to that. We don't even know what it is to sit and just be. And I really identified with that. Started to pick things where it was not about striving, you know, not about ticking the box. And I think a downside in all of the knowledge we have now is that everything can be for a reason. And that's part of what happened last year. The yoga, the sea swimming, the whatever it might be, we now know how good it is on a kind of scientific level. And that's great, you know, it might prompt you to do something. But for me, I lost along the way the capacity to just do things for fun, you know, to amble rather than to walk. You know, a walk is a walk for a reason. And when you've not been in the practice of doing it, to acknowledge that, to say I'm 42 and all I do is do. Even in the good times, even in the last couple of years in the recovery, it's like, and when you're not in that space, it's really hard to understand until you start to practice it. You know, and I think, and that's why when you think back, like as a teenager, that was the last time, like when we just did, we didn't know any of this stuff, but I have a real sense of the joy of that time, you know, when we were doing what we did, you know. So it's trying to get into that space again. And I think part of this is almost a wishing for non-awareness. And that's because there's no compassion with it. You know, that was pointed out to me recently. Like, awareness is great, but awareness without compassion is really exhausting as well.
And awareness with self-criticism is even more so.
When it's underpinned by things are not good enough, and that came through with a counsellor as well. I say, like, some days you might be magnificent, and other days good enough is getting your butt out of bed, going to work and making the dinner.
Yeah.
And that is good enough on a particular day. If that day isn't good enough and you're striving to get whatever else in business or personal, the frustration and annoyance around that, and when you have days like that back to back, for me, I'm going in a bad direction again. It's analogous to what happened But now I have the awareness. So it's like trying to understand what good enough is, accepting when I am magnificent and accepting when I'm not, and finding what good enough means.
I
And
love that. I
finding
love that
good enough.
awareness that you can be magnificent and you can be just good enough, and the two can coexist with the ebb and flow of life. It doesn't have to be one or the other all the time. And just being able to manage that balance. I can really hear the message of be curious. Be curious about what it is that's right for you on a given day.
It's starting to embrace the phrase that I used to hate, which is, moderation and everything. And then I heard the phrase moderation and everything, including moderation. But you're not going to change overnight. You have to acknowledge that. And if you don't continue with some sort of a daily practice of whatever that might be, and coming back to these conversations and engaging with groups and people that live in this space, that it's just a slow, progress rather than perfection. I like that one as well. Like that was news to
I
me,
love your concept of ambling. Like I certainly have found my days are much better if I get up an hour earlier and just amble. I can get up an hour later than and get up and get the breakfast, get the kids out, get ready, get but that just time to just sit and have a coffee and maybe put out the washing or maybe do, very mundane things. But I've noticed those days are different. And it isn't necessarily yoga or walking, but it's just a very mundane thing that makes my day better. And it took me an awfully long time. I was actually quite cross with myself that's what was actually going to make the difference. You're laughing at me.
But I think, because I get the cross thing. I think it's a, if you're of a certain age or whatever, and it's just, oh my God, like it's kind of like, not that I don't know how to live, but there's elements of that. Like there's elements of like, oh, look at all of these parts of myself that I just have thrown by the wayside. But if you're, if you can't acknowledge that, how do you start to change them? So you got to get over that anger, don't you? You got to get over that kind of sense of it's and the too late. Like, of course, it's never too
Yeah,
late.
never too late.
It's never too late. And change can come quickly and slowly, but it happens for sure.
Well, one of the things that I've heard from this interview and from one of the other podcast participants was that curiosity and people being, when it reframed counselling, so they didn't want to go counselling where they thought this is going to be deep and meaningful and delve into stuff and history, and they were scared of it. And they took the brave step of contacting a counsellor and were very surprised to realise it didn't end up being about any of those things, and it was about curiosity about how they were managing their life. And that term that you've used about just being curious and learning about yourself, because everybody's different, so only you can know what gives you energy. I think that's a really powerful message for people, and something we probably don't talk enough about.
No, there's so much that goes to make everybody up, isn't there? Our history, our upbringing, our environment, like there's so much.
Well, one of the things that
Think.
really strikes me with you, Dec, is there's so much and also a desire to help others, and that altruism and that generosity of sharing such an intimate story and something that a lot of people do. Let's face it, a lot of people do still see it as very taboo and not PC to talk about, or an indication of somebody's weakness. Like anybody who's been through suffering may have thought that in the past, and then it's very humbling when you go through it and realize it can happen to anyone. And so I think you've been incredibly generous and brave to share your story in the hope of helping other people recognize earlier. So thank you very much for doing that on behalf of anybody listening. I think it's incredibly humbling to hear your bravery about your times that were tough. So thank you very much. Is there
Thanks,
anything
Karina.
else you'd like to say or that you'd want to have heard in this podcast?
No, I think that's it. I really hope that, people at whatever stage of the journey they're on, whether they're just starting out in their career or, my age or even older, that they gather something from it. And I would just, for me, it's repeating the word stop. It's like just
Stop.
Be curious as to what stopping would be like.
It's so interesting
And
because I think I can associate with some of that busyness and wanting to go in. And I almost feel when you, every time I've asked, I said it a couple of times during the interview going, and so what would you do? And you keep going, stop. And I'm like, oh, there needs to be more to it than that. And it's like, where's the secret sauce? But actually, no, just stop. So I think I have a lot to reflect on here because I can feel the resistance in myself. When every time you've just said stop, I'm like, no, isn't that so interesting?
best ideas are simple, aren't they?
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Pharmacist. If you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you listened to this episode. And for more information, you can follow us on Twitter at Resilient Pharm.